Hello and welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Fantasy Focus Football. Sorry, this is on this note. It's presented by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways that you could save. Hello, my name is Daniel Dopp. This is my friend Mike Clay. And our friend Al Zeidenfeld is also joining us.
Good start, man.
Yeah, well, hey, you know
what?
Off and running. I actually forgot. I didn't realize that the thing wasn't on the top of the thing here. So it's
all this
me.
Time. We're sitting here prepping all this time for the show.
We were talking about going on vacation together.
You're already on vacation. You're not even, you moved on. You're past the opening line of the show. You're on vacation already. But
speaking of
anyway. Vacation,
Al coming to us live from Los Angeles.
Oh my, come on, Daniel.
I'm close to Las Vegas.
How you doing today, Al?
I'm doing great. How are you, Daniel?
I'm doing pretty well. We're going to be doing a best ball conversation today. In case you guys don't know what best ball is,
yeah.
The CSS DFS podcast. Usually we come together during the season. We'll talk about a lot of daily fantasy stuff. But today we're going to talk best ball, which is a really fun strategy and a game type. Has some season long stuff to it. Has some almost like tournament
very similar.
DFS
yeah.
stuff to it. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to be able to dive in. But guys, before we get started, anything. I just want anything you want to get off your chest. Anything you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about my shirt here. So I have a custom made AJ Brown Eagles t-shirt here, which I didn't even know I could get that. And when it became available, shout out to our good friend of the show, Anita Marks.
Oh yeah.
Who, if you watch Daily Wager, she always wears awesome shirts like this. Unique. It's like if she has a list of 10 players she's going to talk about, she'll just switch shirts throughout the whole show and have some sort of it'll be like Alec Ingold, and she'll be talking fullback over
That's
under, and she'll have like an Alec Ingold shirt. That's an exaggeration, but anyway, she's awesome. Got me this cool shirt, so I'm sporting it today. Shout out to our friend Anita Marks.
Heck yeah. Al, what about you, buddy? I know I'm going to be seeing you in person here in just a little bit because I'm coming out to visit LA, but what are you doing until then?
So shout out to the 10 under Cheviot Hills All-Star team who have made the finals of the divisional round out here.
Hey, all right.
We've won 7 in a row and we're crushing the ball, scored 27 runs last night, and we get to play against Jeff Supon's team. If you guys ever watch Major League Baseball, Mike, I know you don't know. Baseball's a sport, Mike. They play it on a diamond, 9 players at a time. They throw balls and then you try to hit them.
No, no. I remember. I just thought they shut it down. Like that, they don't play that anymore, right? They used to be a sport. It's just only kids play that now, right?
It's still a sport. There's even a guy playing right now from Japan. He hits and he pitches. It's
no
great.
Way.
It's
that's not fair. I don't think that's fair. Oh, by the way, though, how about Colorado Avalanche? Shout out to the Avalanche. Won the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time since I was a kid. I actually grew up an Avalanche fan for whatever reason.
Did you really?
I've kind of migrated towards the Flyers as I've gotten older, just being from the Philly area, but grew up a Peter Forsberg, Chris Drury, Joe Sakic fan, Sam Soslinch, all those guys. So
that tells me a lot about your fandom. You just like teams that win a lot. Is that what you're trying to be?
Exactly.
Like, that's what it was as a child.
What if the Flyers won? Not much, unfortunately. But anyway, shout out to the Avs. That was cool to see them win the cup last night.
All right, let's talk some football. Do you guys mind?
Sure, we can do that, sure. I guess.
Al, will you tell me, for our listeners, for everybody that doesn't know what this is, best ball, it's a game that we've talked about. You've heard Matthew Fields, Stefania and I, we've all talked about it on the show. But Al, just as somebody that does this, I don't want to say for a living, but for a living, talk to me about nope.
He plays this baseball game or something for a living, apparently, whatever that
talk
is.
Talk to me about what best ball is.
So best ball is basically a fantasy football league that you're going to draft. It's kind of like the Keno of fantasy football. You draft your team. It's no transactions. You don't have to set a lineup every week. You get no trades. It's a war of attrition. Whoever has the healthiest team is likely going to do very well over the course of that 17 weeks. Now, if you're playing what's called a sit and go league, which is just like your friends and family league, it's one league, self-contained. You're going to play a total points league over 17 weeks, and that's going to be that. The system will put in your highest scoring lineup over the course of every single week once all the scoring is done. So one quarterback, two running backs, typically 3 wide receivers, a tight end, and a flex. Obviously, you can enter leagues that have differentiating rules like super flex or whatever else. Know the rules before you get in. There's also big time tournaments out there. I think Underdog has a $10 million tournament prize pool with $2 million in first place, $1 million in second place, another $1 million if you win the first 14-week regular season. DraftKings has their own menu of tournaments as well with a ton of money up top at all different price points, $5, $25, $200, and whatever. Get in where you fit in. That's a 14-week regular season with 3 weeks of playoffs And there's a big difference in how the leagues operate once you get to the playoffs versus that total points regular season.
Okay, so let's talk really quickly. Sit and go. When you talk about best ball, sit and go, we're specifically saying you draft guys, and it is a self-contained league that then goes an entire 17 weeks. It's like you just said, Al, it is you and 10 friends, 12 friends, and you don't do anything. You don't change the lineup. It automatically sets in for you, and it's just whoever has the best lineup at the end of the 17 weeks is just the winner.
Yeah, and that's what I've done mostly in my experience at best ball, right? Like, you're seeing the tournament start to pop up now, right, with some of the sites, but, you know, I feel like MFL 10s, right, are friends over at my
fantasy.
That's
where it all started. Yeah,
that's kind of where it all started years ago, and we used to kind of do a few of them in the offseason, kind of subbing them in for, like, mock drafts, right, basically, just kind of draft in the middle of the offseason, whenever you want. We used to do them after the Super Bowl, right? Like, right away, you could start doing them for next season. And then you kind of have to wait a long time to see how they played out. But that's kind of how it all started. They're still around, and you can still do that. And actually, some of them have, you know, defenses too. Some of those, like the MFL 10s, you could, you know, draft two or three defenses. You know, we're going to talk a lot about our friends over at DraftKings and their kind of formats today, and they don't have defense. So, which, you know, has its ups and downs. You know, if you can always play the strategy and take advantage of leagues that have defenses. But anyway, we're going to get into all that here on the show.
Yeah. And Al, like you said, so we're talking about sit and go tournaments all 17 weeks. And then you have what has been basically these tournaments that have come up where the first 14 weeks are the regular season. And then kind of take everybody through how it works after that, basically the playoffs of best ball from that standpoint. Mm-hmm.
So in the playoffs for best ball, it's basically whoever finishes one or two typically in their league advances to the playoff round, just like the National Fantasy Football Leagues that people play all the time, the big money leagues that people play all the time. The difference is you have to finish at the top of your group to advance to the next round of playoffs. So it goes from a 14-week total points league to a one-week, almost DFS-style one-week league where there might be 10, 20, 25, 50 teams in that grouping that you're in, depending on the size of the tournament that you choose to enter. And you got to finish at the top of your group in order to be able to play the next week. So it's a survive and advance league from there out and a one-week thing as opposed to a war of attrition over 14 weeks. So a lot of people right now are starting to correlate for those playoff weeks and most specifically that week 17 matchup, which will be the championship week where all the money is sitting up top. So a lot of people correlating their teams with stacks and bring back plays from games that project to be fast paced, high scoring, and whatever else. I think like the Bengals, the Chiefs and the Bills. I think the Bills are playing the Monday night game or the Sunday night game in week 17. So they're trying to stack that game within their lineup.
So first off, you're telling me that not only do I need to just have a great draft, but I'm now planning my draft around week 17. My draft right now in June, I'm doing a week 17 strategy around. That's what you're saying.
So here's the thing with that, right? Exactly. So there's meta thinking. There's the game within the game, right? So if you're playing this tournament, you can't play week 17 if you don't get to week 17. So you got to get there through the regular season. You got to get through week 15 and 16 also. But best ball tournaments are all about stacking these micro edges, these small edges. So if you don't want to draft that way, you don't have to. But if you're, you know, if you're into stacking all these small edges, these half percents, 1%, 1.5% edges along the way to give yourself the smallest edge over the field to try and differentiate your playoff roster if you are fortunate enough to make it that far, that's what's going to align you better to possibly put yourself in the position to make money. Now you're talking the big money, right? But that doesn't mean you're going to win. You're talking about a smaller edge, you know, a couple of percentile points that you're trying to gain an edge, but every piece of expected value matters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm excited for, you know, the Bills starters to be resting in week 17 and Duke Johnson Jr. called up off the practice squad, goes for 120, just kind of like last year, right? Goes for 120 and a couple touchdowns and wins people. You know, is anybody drafting Duke Johnson? Is it, how deep are we getting here, Al? Do we have to draft Duke Johnson in the 20th round and in anticipation of him?
DraftKings has a 20 round draft. Right. So you're getting much deeper than the ESPN standard drafts, especially the ones that are 10 team leagues. These are 12 team leagues on DraftKings drafting 20 rounds, different sites draft, like Underdog drafts 18. There's other apps as well that go 18 or 20 rounds. So you're going to determine what type of roster you're going to make. There's no kickers. There's no defense. Typically in best ball, I know that MFL 10 still probably have kickers and defense. So you have to allocate to get those. But realistically speaking, you're drafting two-ish quarterbacks, five-ish running backs, eight-ish wide receivers, and two-ish tight ends. And then you'll fill in wherever you're weak past there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll kind of get into the details of why you go that direction as we go on here, because that's similar numbers to what I have, but there's some gamesmanship involved there and some strategy. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends, yeah. Right? If you take two quarterbacks, maybe you want to take an extra tight end. So we'll get into that here as we go position by position.
Okay, so just as we're getting into this, you're drafting, right? I want to get into best ball. I get in, I'm going to do a draft now. Do I look at, like, as a part of this, you're talking about if it's a tournament or things like that, do bye weeks matter to me? If I've got 20 people on my roster, is it like I'm just going to have enough to be able mm-hmm. to fill in? Or how closely are you looking at bye weeks in comparison to how we do doing season-long fantasy football?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm kind of, when we're talking on the normal season-long show, season-long drafts, I'm usually the one who's like, don't worry too much about it, right? So much is going to change yeah. throughout the mm-hmm. season, and you can always, you know what, let's say you have too many of your running backs have the same bye week, right? Your top two running backs have the same bye week, and you have one on your bench, maybe another guy you don't want to use that's kind of an insurance back, so you pick someone up off waivers and start them, right? Well, you can't do that here, right? So it's a little bit different. So it's not like you have to make sure your set, you know, let's say your six running backs all have different byes, right? You could have a couple that have the same yep. bye. But you don't want to draft two quarterbacks that have the exact same bye and take a zero that week, right? So, again, it's a kind of common sense. You can't use waivers yeah. here. You have 20 players, and you have to make sure you coordinate those byes to an extent. Again, don't go too overboard with it, but especially for those positions where you only have, you know, two guys, maybe three, you don't want to have the exact same bye week.
Sure. Alan, anything to add to that?
No, he's smart.
All right.
I'll go with what Mike said.
I like that. That's good analysis. Can before, we cut that?
Before we get into talking that. About specific positions, I want to ask one more question. In talking about, so what we do, CSS DFS during the season, in case you listen to us on a regular basis, we talk about a lot of times either, you know, your tournament lineups. Al will set a tournament lineup. Mike, you'll set a mm-hmm. cash lineup. And these best ball lineups are a little bit more of a tourney type of a play. I'm curious, Al, how is it that you would compare this to single game DFS the way that we do during the season versus, you know, you want to have some ceiling, but you also have to realize that you can't just shoot for the fences because you have to have enough floor to be able to carry you in those weeks where maybe your ceiling guys don't hit. So knowing that it's not a 1 week game, I'm just curious that the difference between the two there.
I mean, it's a delicate balance, right? So in the first few rounds, you're trying to just take the best players, and sometimes you're trying to take the guys that are going to correlate with quarterbacks that you want later on in the draft. Or if you're building an early stack, like let's say you go Stephon Diggs in the first round and Josh Allen in the third, you already have like the most powerful stack in fantasy football right now. So yes, I am worried about correlating my lineup specifically around my quarterback with at least two of their pass catchers moving down the lineup. If you want to worry about playoff week correlation, your primary stack is team A, and you know that they're going to play players from, you know, teams B, C, and D in weeks 15, 16, 17. Having that bring back player from those teams can be important. If that game does go off for a lot of points, you're going to capture all of it, and that's going to throttle you towards the next round in the playoffs, which is what it's all about at that point, is survive in advance. And then it just comes down to where you like your picks and plays. So like I will go for in the later rounds like 11 through 20, I will take players that have a higher upside, right? So we're focusing on making small errors, right? So if a player comes in those rounds and he's a 40% running back, meaning he gets 40% of the snaps and touches at running back, if he stays that the entire season, we're fine because we're drafting him at price. But if the player in front of him goes down and all of a sudden he throttles up to a 60 or 70% of the snaps and touches running back, now we have all this upside and the downside of him not contributing all that much if drafted at current value in ADP changes, much like Cam Akers going down last year and Daryl Henderson becoming that 65% guy for the majority of the season. You have a massive win at ADP. So you're drafting for upside, especially in the second half of the drafts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I, you know, I'll add that you do want to focus on ceiling here, right? Especially in, you know, there's differences, right? Like you can do, you might maybe in your league, the top six get paid, right? So it might be worthwhile to be more conservative and stacking is not as important. But if you're doing like one of the tournaments we're talking about, where you're trying to get that $1 million or whatever it may be, you have to basically draft, again, you're drafting for ceiling, but you have to essentially draft as if everything's going to go right on your team, right?
Correct.
So let's mm-hmm. say you load up on running backs early on in your draft. You don't want to just keep spending picks on running backs later. Like you don't need those insurance backs necessarily because you're assuming your
those
early
two
round
guys
picks
are
going to work out. If they don't work out, you're going to lose anyway, right? You yeah. need everyone to pan out. Mm-hmm. So And so, and then let's say you take Dalvin Cook, right? End of first round, you take Dalvin Cook. A little bit later, you might think in season long, like a regular draft where you're just trying to make the playoffs, be in the top six. And when you're, you know,
I'll grab Alexander Madison.
Exactly.
Mike.
Right. And he's not super expensive in drafts, but in this format, you know, if Dalvin Cook goes down and you're relegated to using Alex Madison, that's probably not a great turnout for your team. If Cook goes out, it's going to hurt your team. Maybe pivot to someone else's insurance back. Take a Tony Pollard instead, or, you know, he's going a little earlier. Maybe not the best example, but find another insurance back, because if their starter gets hurt, the other team gets worse. Like, it's anti-fragile drafting, right? The other team in your league gets hurt because they just lost their starter, and you essentially have their backup. They sub in, your team gets better, theirs gets worse, and your odds of winning are much better. So you have to think about that when you're doing a tournament type league.
I promise. All the stuff that Mike said there was really smart. Just hit the rewind button a couple times, listen to it a few times in a row, follow exactly what he said. It was perfect. It was perfect because you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Okay.
The problem, I don't want to say, there's no problem. Well, it's just a lot to explain where it's like the reason why we do those, right? You take Alexander Madison for this case, right? Dalvin Cook goes down and it's like, okay, but if Dalvin Cook goes down, then now I have the guy that's going to score 20 points in his place.
Right.
But that, what if you have Dalvin Cook and then Zeke goes down and now you have a third running back, mm-hmm. and maybe Dalvin Cook has a tough week and Zeke all of a sudden is a guy that's now, or Tony Pollard is a guy that's starting all the time. So like that's the upside or the ceiling of what it is that you're talking about. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
You have to team build as if your early round picks are going to work out. If you do that and try to have your backup for all your starters, what are you doing? Your team has no ceiling. You're going to get beat by someone else who has a better constructed team. So again, I'm not saying you apply this to every format, right? If we start talking about our normal redraft season long drafts, we're not going to say the same thing, right? There's some appeal to that. You know, taking someone else's insurance back, but in this case, it just doesn't make sense to do that. You're just tying your hands, basically.
I'm going to ask one more question about stacking because we've talked about it. And Al, I'm going to kind of throw this at you. I know that there is a plan. You go into a draft. You're looking to do a stack. Maybe you take a quarter or a wide receiver early, and then all of a sudden, someone else in the draft comes in and snipes the quarterback away from you. Mm-hmm. And now you've got a spot where it's like, well, shoot, do I still go and grab that second wide receiver or that second tight end? Can you have stacks without being able to get the quarterback? Because sometimes the draft just doesn't work out the way that you plan it to work out.
A lot of the time, it does not work out the way that you plan it to work out. It's actually like my biggest pet peeve in tournaments right now is that if people see you building a stack, they will worry about your team and not their own and try to snipe a player that they know that you're going to go for there, whether it be a wide receiver or more typically an unstacked quarterback, just to try and block your stack where you've got like maybe two of the pass catchers from that stack. Well, I'm going to take this quarterback so he can't have them.
What's that's with exactly that?
That doesn't even make sense.
That's like, get off my lawn.
Exactly the
like,
wrong way to draft but, in best ball.
But if someone does that, then they don't have the other part of the stack and it kind of defeats the purpose, right?
You're just keeping both of us from winning $1 million
is what
you're doing.
Yourself too. So that, I mean, they're just,
it happens
again,
all
they're hurting
the,
themselves.
It's a crabs in a bucket mentality. It's like, well, you're not going to get what you want, but I'm going to die too, but now we're both down here.
Yeah. I mean, if I see Al in my draft, I'm like, I'm taking this guy down, right? I don't want him to win. That guy has won enough. Do that.
Win, right? Go for the win, but that means that you're paying attention to your own roster build and building your team, as opposed to I'm going to take this guy that I know he wants. When that doesn't help your team out at all,
it makes zero sense.
Yep,
zero sense. You're just, if the stack works out, it helps you both, right? So you're helping your opponent and yourself. If it doesn't work out, you're helping the rest of the league, right? It makes no sense. You want to build your own stacks, and if your stacks pan out, you're good to go, right?
You know, I'm going to lead us into this. Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save money on some insurance?
I would love that. I need to get more best ball leagues so I could take Al out.
That's right. Of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, am I right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners, condo, or renters coverage. You'd even save more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app available 24-hour. All 24 hours, not just 20 hours, please know. Available 24-hour roadside assistance and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes easy. Switch today and see all the ways that you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a great rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save today. All right, guys. So let's talk about some of these positions. All right, let's jump into it. And I want to talk about quarterbacks because we've been talking nonstop about stacking, how if you're going to play best ball, the best way to do it strategy-wise, correlation and making sure that you're stacking. So it's easy for us to be able to talk about some of the early stacking options, right? Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs or Justin mm-hmm. Herbert and Keenan Allen. Like, that's simple. I want to talk about some of the deeper, like, post-quarterback 12, late-round stacking options that you guys like.
Okay.
So, Mike, I'm going to mm-hmm. start with you. I'm going to say, let's give me your 1 through 5. Let's start at number 5. Who is your fifth favorite late-round quarterback, wide receiver
okay.
stacking option?
All right. And first of all, we should point out, just I feel like we should tee up each position this way. You're going for generally 2 quarterbacks, right? Usually you want a good quarterback and maybe a QB2. In a perfect world, that's what you're doing. If you take a chance on a second quarterback, maybe you want to throw a dart at a third one, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe late you want to go after Mac Jones or Zach Wilson or something. So 2 to 3, right, is our range. And I could agree or disagree then, but essentially we're going for 2 or 3. So to answer your question, though, my number 5 favorite stack after, again, we're eliminating the top 12 quarterbacks here in terms of ADP is Aaron Rodgers. He's going QB 13. So mm-hmm. again, the problem with Aaron Rodgers, the reason he's not higher here is because it's hard to find great guys to stack him with. But I do have him number 5. He's QB 13. You can get him in about the 8th round of MFL 10 drafts. And I'm looking at Alan Lazard and Christian Watson, round 10, round 12. They're not too expensive, right? Which yep. is nice. It's not the best situation in the world. You don't really have a star player. But again, that makes it attainable as well because all 3 of those guys don't cost you a lot. So that's my number 5 stack.
All right, Al, what about you?
So my number 5 is going to be Kirk Cousins, currently with an ADP of 112. I'm working off DraftKings ADPs for these. I just wrote them down this morning, so they are accurate. Obviously, that Justin Jefferson guy is pretty good at football. He's got a first-round ADP. So if you're going with kind of a zero RB approach and you draft Justin Jefferson, very easy to pair him with his QB, Thielen at 64, Irv Smith, who I absolutely love at tight end this season at 137, and KJ Osborne at 165. They project to throw the ball a whole lot more this year than they have the last 2 when they were like 20th in terms of pass expectancy. Over what's the stat, Mike? I don't remember.
I don't know.
Pass rate over expected.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Game script adjusted pass rate.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. They didn't throw the ball a lot before. They project to throw the ball a lot more this year. So Kirk Cousins very undervalued right mm-hmm. now, as are his pass catchers.
How many yep. of those guys are you comfortable? I hate to interrupt. You just mentioned the entire basically Vikings yeah. pass catching core. Al, let's say mm-hmm. that you're playing, you get Justin Jefferson. How many of those guys are you actively going to try out to grab in order to stack? Are you doing an entire Vikings offense pass catchers? Or are you saying 2 guys, 3 guys? How do you go into that? A skinny stack?
So I'm going mostly with 2 to 3. If that's going to be one of my secondary stacks, right? So my QB1 is probably going to be in those top 12 QBs drafted. For my secondary stack, I want 2, possibly 3 guys, especially when they come in at such low ADPs like this. And again, they do play the Packers in week 17. So if you wanted to grab one of those Packers as a bring back play in the case that you get to that championship week with your team and that game scores 65 real life points, all of a sudden you've captured a ton and you're going to be a little differentiated from some of the other more popular week 17 stacks and bring back.
Mm-hmm. And remember, that's only for the tournaments, right? So it's correct. Only if you're playing
yes, tournament only.
Essentially. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yep. So
all right, Mike,
like that, just keep this in mind. What's tricky about a stack like that is you have to get Justin Jefferson, right? So if you if you get the 10th pick in the first round, you might not get Justin Jefferson. And then you essentially mm-hmm. scrap that. Not to say some of those guys can't be values, you know, cross all the Vikings off your board, but obviously you kind of, it's a less appealing stack for sure.
Absolutely.
So, yes.
All right. So like it. My number 4 here is Carson Wentz. He is QB 27 yeah. in the list right now.
So
if you're at DraftKings, he's very low. He's going in the 15th round in the MFL 10 drafts. And again, lots of options for stacking, right? At least a wide receiver, Terry McLaurin in the 4th round is attainable. John Dotson getting a ton of hype. He looks like the real deal, their first round pick this year in the 12th round. And even Curtis Samuel, too, in the 17th round right now. So again, you don't have to take all 3, but maybe you miss on McLaurin and you grab Dotson and Samuel. And if McLaurin, say, misses time, you're in a really good spot there. But in a perfect world, I think you're going Wentz, McLaurin, and Dotson again, and it's not going to be super expensive. So I think that's a good way to go.
And Logan Thomas right now, ADP 193. Like yeah. if you're looking for another tight end, like that's so low and we've watched him be able to produce.
Yeah. Just keep in mind, he might miss a month, right? So
totally.
Especially in a situation like this, where it's best ball taking a 0 for 4 straight weeks, especially if you only draft 2 tight ends,
you have to draft 3.
I'll tell you what though, if you take Wentz, say McLaurin, and then you miss on Dotson and Samuel and you're panicking and maybe you take your 19th or 20th round pick and he's still sitting there, go for it. You know, go for it. If he comes back after 4 weeks and it's your third tight end anyway, that could really work out for you.
If you know that someone is going to be missing time, I feel like you have to have more than just one backup, right?
Yeah. And you, by the way, you could probably do J.D. McKissic here too. Their pass catching back. It's, it's an option.
Pretty much everyone other than Brian Robinson. All right, Al, talk to me about your number four stack.
Number four for me is going to be like, you're going to build this stack in reverse, a lot like the Justin Jefferson stack. So if you are somebody who wants to spend on Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle because you believe in that Miami offense, Tua has an ADP of 123 right now. Like, the arrow does seem to be pointing up with the change in offense, all the offensive weapons that they've put around him now. Is he in a situation where he's too good to fail and that ADP is extremely low? Like, he's being drafted as like the QB 17, so a middling QB2. With big time upside, and what we like for best ball, especially when drafting our second quarterback, is these big splash weeks. And who better than speedsters like Jalen Waddle and one of the best ever at big splash plays and big splash weeks than Tyreek Hill. So if you want to get both of those guys, Tyreek has like an ADP on DraftKings of 22. Jalen Waddle is about 38. So if you're drafting the middle of the set of the middle round picks 5 through 8, you can build this stack extremely easily without a first round premium on either one of those wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And Gesicki's like 120 right now, so he doesn't cost you anything either.
Way late. Yeah.
I like that. I was telling you guys before, I did a 30 second best ball this morning right before the show. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my stacks. I didn't put it on the list because I went a lot deeper other than Rodgers, so it's not on my list, but I did do Tua. I did Tyreek Hill. I think I got him in the end of the second round somehow. And then I did Gesicki too as well. Yep. So, you know, again, I thought about Cedric Wilson late. I just missed on him too. I was going to add a third one just because, a little bit of insurance. But look, if Jalen Waddle misses time, it should be Gesicki and it should be Tyreek Hill. And if it works out that way, that's what you need, right? You need some breaks. You need some luck as well.
That's right.
And you can take some chances. So I like that one as well.
I love that too, especially because, Al, like you're saying, this is going to be your second quarterback. This is not the guy that you're thinking is going to draft. He's going to be your number one. So those splash weeks, and what better guy than someone that's got Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill to have potentially a massive breakout every once in a while.
Yeah, you definitely want some guys that have some, you're not drafting at their ceiling, right? If you're there's a reason these guys are going late, right? So you want to take guys that have a chance to kind of make the leap forward. Think about Joe Burrow last year. Great example, right? Jamar Chase last year wasn't super expensive, right? Again, he was attainable. You could get Chase and Higgins and then late get Joe Burrow. And again, you're not drafting these guys at their ceiling. We knew that. And then of course, Burrow makes the big leap forward and he takes the whole offense with him and look out, you know, you could have, ideally you don't want a running back in there too, but you could, it would have worked with Mixon as well. Mixon was fantastic last year. So there's a lot of ways to attack it, but that's what you're looking for. You're looking for stacks of guys that are not quite at their ceiling.
For the record, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. If I get like CMC in most any draft, I'm always trying to draft like as an insurance, just like as a third quarterback, probably the Panthers quarterback, just because I shouldn't say that.
Baker Mayfield.
I was going to just say that. I said, I would not do. I would not take Sam Darnold or Matt Corral because not good. That's number one.
Matt Corral's not even good. He hasn't even had a chance to play football. And Mike Clay saying,
not going to be good this year in fantasy. We'll say that. I like him as a I liked him as a prospect. I'm not sure how I feel with him going in the fifth round, but
we'll see.
I mean, there is some thought to that. Maybe you take a Baker late because either Seattle or Carolina, that's not a bad situation in terms of targets, right? I mean, Baker, that could help DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett as well, not to mention Noah Fant. I mean, that could work out. So there is some thought to, you know, taking Baker late with that in mind. I mean, DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson and maybe Tommy Tremble breaks out in CMC. I mean, there are some options there. It's just tough because it's hard to stack though, right? Because you don't know which team he's going to, but it is a guy you can throw a dart at late.
Also not like the highest scoring of teams that you love stacking with, you know, right now the Carolina Panthers. But anyways, all that to be said, give me your number three late round stack.
All right, number three. Speaking of potential breakout players, maybe this year's Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Jacksonville, quarterback 18. He's going in the 11th round. So again, the only thing I don't love about this one, I just love Lawrence and the possibility of him breaking out and being that breakout quarterback. And I want some exposure to him. The problem is, again, his targets could be kind of spread out, right? And that's what bothers me. But here's the thing, much like Green Bay, they're not expensive. Christian Kirk's going in the 9th round. They paid him a lot of money to be their number one. Marvin Jones is always undervalued. He's going in the 15th round.
Yeah.
He could easily score. If Lawrence breaks out, he could score 8-9 touchdowns for sure. He's going to play a lot. And Evan Engram, 15th round again. So you can find your way to two guys to stack with Trevor Lawrence this year. And honestly, you could go Travis Etienne as well. He's pricey as a running back, but he's going to catch a ton of footballs.
Yeah, I remember when Travis Etienne, the ADP had not adjusted when I first started doing these best ball drafts, mm-hmm. and he wasn't going so high. Can't help but notice Laviska Shenault just not even mentioned as
a part of that. We don't talk about Bruno or Shenault.
All right.
Yeah, Al, he's been redacted. I can't say his name.
Give me number three for you on this list.
Number three for me is also Trevor Lawrence, for all the reasons that Mike just said. He is dope.
All right, moving on.
With Lawrence, he is the cheapest guy to double stack with. So you don't even have to spend earlier, like on a fifth round wide receiver hoping to get one of these guys, or like Tyreek Hill in the second, or Jalen Waddle at the 3-4 mm-hmm. turn in order to stack him later with Tua. Like, you need a QB2? Fine. My other guys got taken. I can go with Lawrence and still have two guys later that I can stack with him. So he's a very friendly QB2 stack. And if it hits, if Lawrence has that, I don't know, 4,200 yards and 28 to 32 touchdown year, like if he just bursts onto the scene in year two, now that the circus has left town from last year on the sidelines, they're going to get dragged along with him. And he has better running skills than most want to give him. He is not a running quarterback, but he is at worst a pocket plus and more than likely a very good mobile quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, I like that one.
Yeah.
That was my pick too at three. So we're on the same page.
Give me number two here, Mike.
Okay. Number two. Okay. So I'm referring back to the draft I did this morning. Check this out. So I just talked earlier about essentially drafting as if everything will work out, right? So
correct.
My first pick was Jonathan Taylor. I got the first pick.
Oh, first overall.
I came all the way back around at 24 and 25. I got Tyreek Hill, which I'm surprised he fell that far, but got Tyreek Hill. And then Alvin Kamara.
Yeah. That's now, crazy.
Right. Now, Alvin Kamara is plummeting right now. Yes, he could face a suspension in season. He also may not face a suspension in season. You essentially want to draft as if he'll be out there for every game. If he's not, you're probably in trouble. But again, he might just miss a few games. We don't really know. There's a lot going off on off the field. We'll have to keep an eye on that. But my thinking was, I'm going to take him, and if he does play out the season and work out and is good like he was a couple of years ago, that's huge to get in the third round, right? So mm-hmm. that's where I'm going with this. I love stacking the Saints. There are so many options. Even if you want to stay away from Kamara, you don't get him. You don't have to take him. Jameis Winston, QB20 in the DraftKings
order. So late.
14th round ADP. And again, the options, you can go so many ways here.
Well, can I ask a question real quick? You said QB20. Has Jameis Winston ever thrown for 5,000 yards in the NFL?
Yes.
Oh, he has. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead with the rest of your list, Mike.
He has. And he was pretty good last year. He was, what, fourth in QBR, I think, when he got hurt? He was playing pretty well. So you have options here, right? Michael Thomas, 7th round ADP. Chris Olave, the rookie, 10th round. Jarvis Landry in the 12th. I also mentioned Kamara, probably staying away from the tight ends here. Maybe you want to throw a dart on Adam Trautman, probably not. But anyway, you have options here. And here's the thing, which is really interesting to me. Michael Thomas's ADP is falling, right? So now you could say, all right, if he plays and I get him in the 7th round or the 8th round, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge payoff, right? If he's healthy and it's his old self. So you can go that direction. You could say Thomas and Landry or something, or Olave, right? Or you could say, you know what? I've had enough of this. He hasn't played in 2 years. He's still not back. I'm just going to fade him. Yeah. I'm going to go Winston, Olave, Landry. And if Thomas doesn't play, again, those guys are going to be on the field all the time and they're going to produce at a high-end level. This is an offense that is potential at least to be very good. So, again, and it's super cheap. These guys are all super cheap, and totally it can be you. Very good. That's what you're doing. You're drafting as if it's going to work out. And if it does, it could be fantasy points galore. We know what Jameis Winston can bring to the table. So love the Saints stack.
I am 100% with you, Mike. The idea of what we have seen. And NFL quarterback Jameis is a whole different conversation than we're talking about, like, upside fantasy Jameis.
Yeah. And I guess so. Like I said, last year he was up there in QBR. So he actually was playing very well.
I would love it if he took that next step as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But the idea of, he loves to chuck it. You know he's going to be out there doing that. He's got a ton of guys that really have great value around him. Like you just mentioned, Alvin Kamara is the only early round guy. And he is going, like you said, he's quarterback 20 right now, Jameis Winston
is, yeah.
That is unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal for what he could do.
And again, Kamara falling all the way to the end of round two into round three. As of today, that's as of this morning. So.
Al, how do you feel about that? Do you hate it? Do you love it?
I have so much Jarvis Leonard. He was one of those players that I targeted as being way too cheap before he signed. And then his ADP didn't move all that much north when he signed with the Saints. Working into a high playing time role, and we know how much of a target monster he's been in the past. And there's still the case, like you just said numerous times, that Michael Thomas may not go. So we could be looking at a 20%+ target percent guy mm-hmm. in the 12th round. That's absurd.
Crazy value,
right?
Crazy value. I agree. And again, you're planning on it. You're drafting from this perspective mm-hmm. as though this is what's going to happen and work out process.
Yeah.
All right, Al, give me your number two stack for top.
So
late round.
This could be around my bias, but like
on the Fantasy Focus
podcast,
football podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Now I'm done.
CFS. This could be my own bias of guys that I've clicked a whole lot this summer, and I have clicked so much Elijah Moore at mm-hmm. his current ADP, which is like 77.5. I really believe in the talent of this kid. And also, I like it when teams build and really spend around their young quarterbacks. Not unlike, I'm not saying it's out of the same year, but not unlike the Rams did when Jared Goff was somebody that everybody thought should be out of the league his rookie year. And then the second year, they bring in coaches, they bring in an offensive line, they bring in talent around him, they draft a talented wide receiver, that Cooper Kupp kid, he's pretty good. So all of a sudden, we have a similar situation cooking in New York where they're bringing in all these players. Corey Davis is an extremely professional wide receiver. Elijah Moore, I think, is a burgeoning star. They've got Garrett Wilson, who they spent draft equity on. They bring in two solid blocking and pass-catching tight ends to try and make this kid's job easier. And as a gunslinger, I want a kid that's going to take shots down the field as my QB2 in best ball. So his ADP being 165 right now seems completely ridiculous for the upside that, again, as Mike has stated, we are drafting as though things are going to go right for us. So when I'm drafting that much Elijah Moore, and you're telling me I can get his QB to go along with him at 165 and Corey Davis in the 160s as well, it's very easy for me to get two of his top targets. And if things go well for him and he has that breakout year and takes as many shots downfield as he does like to take, there's splash week potential here. Not just for him to have a 20 to 25 point week for us at QB, but to drag along other players with him as well in a very talented offense with good pass catching back mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, I like it. I had them as honorable mention. The only reason I did not include them is because Moore's a little rich for me. Sure. He's going in the sixth round. It's a little much for me. I just think they, you know, you take Garrett Wilson at that spot. I think it's more likely that he becomes their number one, at least in time this season. We kind of saw that. I mean, you could go both ways with this, right? On one hand, you saw like Deebo Samuel, the second rounder, was better than Brandon Ayuk, the first rounder last year. But in Cincinnati, we saw Ja'Marr Chase, the first rounder, was better as a rookie than T. Higgins was in his second year. So if Elijah Moore falls to a place I'm comfortable with and I take him, I would love to put Garrett Wilson a couple rounds later, say 10th round, and then Zach Wilson with him. But I don't really want Corey Davis. Again, if you take Wilson, both Wilsons, Zach Wilson, Garrett Wilson,
correct, yeah,
and you don't get Elijah Moore, you kind of want to take a third one, right? So maybe you take a shot on a Corey Davis. But I found myself in that position this morning in that draft where I took Garrett Wilson, love him at his value, at his ADP. And then later on, I was thinking, do I take Zach Wilson and take a Corey Davis or a Braxton Berrios or a CJ Uzomah? And I didn't see much upside there. I didn't, for some of the reasons Al laid out, right? They have plenty of guys there, right? We don't really know if Tyler Conklin is going to play a big role or if Jeremy Ruckert will come on later in the season. And Braxton Berrios, I don't think is going to disappear. I think he's going to be involved. And they're talking of Jeff Smith, who I'm not going to get too caught up in that, but they may have a couple design plays for him too. So I think there's kind of a lot of mouths to feed, but you know, again, if Elijah Moore falls, I'm fine with that, but that's why I knocked him off my list anyway.
As a Zach Wilson, though, late round quarterback, definitely a lot of options.
I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Even if you don't like him with Elijah Moore, there are a ton of late round options to be able to stack him with if you like that. All right. We've made it to the top of our list just for quarterbacks. And by the way, we're still going to talk about running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends real quickly, but quarterback stacks is like the heart mm-hmm. of what your best mm-hmm. ball team is. So that's why we've spent so much time talking here. Mike, please, number one for your list.
My number one team is the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
Daniel Dopps, Detroit Lions.
Are you being serious?
That's cheap.
Yes. Yes. That's really? It. That's it.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
We're going with the Lions this year. Look at so cheap, right?
Super cheap.
Jared Goff, QB 24. All right. Going in the 16th round. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown who's going to cost you a six. All right. He was like the best receiver in the league in the last 6 weeks last year in fantasy. It was fantastic. DeAndre Swift is an undervalued running back going in the second round, should probably be going at the end of the first, right? So if you get him in the second round, that kind of sends you on this path. Jameson Williams is going in the 12th round. Now, again, he might miss a month, but if you're going with the stack, you might as well take that shot. If he comes in like Odell Beckham and lights it up,
that's right,
and your drafting is, if it's going to work out, that's going to be huge. And TJ Hawkinson's one of my favorite tight end targets in the 7th round, right? So there's so many guys here you could... I'm too interested in DJ Chark because at some point his value is going to take a hit. Agreed. When Williams comes back. But agreed, you have so many options here, right? So I love this. And I did it today. I had Swift. Actually, I we were talking about it earlier. I got sniped on golf when I was going after him. But I did take Williams and Hawkinson. So I have a little piece of this.
Swift, Williams,
because they're
and
valuable players, right? So it didn't work out with the stack for me this morning in that draft. But I still got pieces of this. And normally you get, say you get Swift in the second and Hawkinson in the 7th, you can just go ahead and get Goff in the 14th, 15th, 16th, and you have a nice little stack there with the Detroit Lions. I love it. That's my favorite.
Ask this question really quickly, because you mentioned that as a part of this, right? Okay, so I also love that stack because he is a guy that's going literally like one of the last starting quarterbacks left on the board.
Right.
When you are looking at a stack like that, and Al, I would love your opinion too, how much are you looking at, boy, I might have to reach a little bit if I have these pass catchers and I'm waiting for this guy to get to me? Are you saying, is this a hard and fast, I will not reach, period, end of story? Is this a, I got a half a round, I got a round? Like, what is the vibe around reaching when it comes to completing these stacks?
Okay, so we said, and I'll let Al jump in here in a second, but just to answer this one specifically with like Jared Goff, right? So 16th round he's going, right? So I'm going to follow my board, and you know, if it's the 11th round, I'm not going to do it, right? Sure. I'm not going to go that early. But you know, we talk often about tiers, right? You generally have these guys in tiers. At some point, you're going to get to a position where Jared Goff's in a tier, and he's probably not at the top of the tier. He's probably maybe third or fourth in this late round sort of tier in a 20 round draft. And at that point, when you come up, and it might be round 14, you might say, all right, well, I need to get that second quarterback. I have other late round guys. It could be Jameis Winston or Zach Wilson or
Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yep. And you might go check, you know, cross a couple guys off and take him there, right? You can go up around a couple rounds earlier than you would have liked to normally to fill out that stack. It's just, you know, it's really that simple, right? You could pass on some guys you might prefer straight up in a season long, but you're getting the guy to fill out your stack. So that's pretty much it. Maybe a round or two, and you should be able to do that. I don't think someone else in your league is stacking Lions and is like, I have to get Jared Goff. Although I guess in this situation, if you took St. Brown and Hawkinson, they could have taken Swift and Jameson Williams and gone after it. So I guess you have to kind of monitor that. But again, I think if you safely attack that tier and go a round or two earlier, you're probably going to be okay.
And then people are just pissed at that at Mike Clay guy on wherever they're doing.
You got a quadruple stack Jared Goff this year.
Well, that's right.
You got to get all these guys.
That's right. Al, what about you? Give us your number. Wait, do you want to say anything about Mike, about how bad that take was?
So I think it's tournament versus sit and go is totally different. I don't really concern myself as much. And I'm going to draft off my board when it comes to sit and go leagues. It's just about total points. So like, you don't have to stack when it comes to, or correlate for playoff rounds where it's an all or nothing situation. You're just trying to be the highest scoring team. So you're trying to get the most draft value you can and point equity that you can get. Now, if it's a tournament and I've already spent some draft equity building these stacks, I'll probably reach not by like 2, 3, 4 rounds, but like if the guy, I'm not going to gamble that my quarterback might last to me, I'll just take him that next pick that I have and not have to wait. So like 10, 12, sometimes 18 picks ahead of ADP, if need be, to fill out a stack.
Okay. I think that makes a ton of sense. And just because, you know, you get in this position, like we talked about earlier, you get in a position where you're like, do I wait? Ooh, do I wait? Are they going to make it those 8 picks or do I not? You know? And so that's, I'm always curious. All right, Al, give me your number one late round quarterback stack.
You're not going to like this, but it's Daniel Jones.
Ah, wow. See, I like it. Yeah.
All right, good. Mike likes like it, so I'm on board.
Kadarius Toney's going pretty late as a number one.
That's why I took Wandale
Tony
today.
At 105.
Yeah.
Kenny Golladay at 126. Sterling Shepard is free. Ricky Seals-Jones are both going at like 226, 227.
That means they're not being drafted in most leagues, correct, Al?
No, they're like last round picks in pretty much every draft that I've done. Whether it's an 18-round draft or a 20-round draft, they're being drafted, but it's in that last round.
Like, so,
everybody's afraid that Sterling Shepard's going to get injured only because he's always gotten injured. And Ricky Seals-Jones, nobody's falling over themselves to draft Ricky Seals-Jones, but he's a solid 18th round pick with a path to playing time in a different offense. So the Giants are going to throw him out there and see what they got. And they're going to have Ryan DeBoer, let him throw downfield and challenge. And maybe he can be, you know, if Josh Allen is a unicorn, maybe he could be like a little miniature unicorn. And there's nothing for them to lose. If he's not what they want, they kick him off to the curb next year and they replace him and move forward. And if he can live up to the hype or what he was billed to be and drafted to be within this different offensive scheme with all these weapons around him, all of a sudden you still have your guy. So they're going to let it rip with Daniel Jones. And as a QB2, and again, repeating that we are going to assume that things work out for us, you're spending not a lot of draft equity to build a second stack that, if it works out, could end up as one of the top 12 QBs in terms of fantasy scoring on the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the Giants. I like almost everything you said there. The one thing I will say is don't bother with the tight ends, right? Because there's already chatter the rookie Daniel Bellinger is going to start for them. And they have Jordan Akins, who I think is probably better than Ricky Seals-Jones. I'm all like always anti-Ricky Seals-Jones. He's like the most, all due respect to the guy, this is all uh-oh, fantasy football value.
He's had an ADR
so
come out.
So overrated. Everyone always is so in on him. And every time he signs somewhere, it's like, there's the guy. You know, we need to get our hands on him. Whether he's like replacing Logan Thomas or in Kansas City, wherever. I can't. It's just painful. Like, just don't even bother with Ricky Seals-Jones. Do not spend a top 20 pick on Ricky Seals-Jones. I'm telling you right now. Don't do
it. A top 20 pick. What about a top 240 pick?
Don't do that either.
Okay.
Don't do that either. Okay. But here's the thing, though. You don't need to, because to Al's point, you have like 75 wide receivers that you can throw darts at. Kenny, yeah. Or you could do Saquon Barkley, right? You take him in the second, third round.
Saquon Barkley's going like the 2-3 turn at this point. So he's absurdly cheap.
Exactly.
And he's going to have a 14-15% target share?
Right. And much like DeAndre Swift, you can go with the running back within the stack because he's going to catch a lot of passes, most likely. Right. So you can go Barkley, but then you have Kenny Galladay super cheap. You have Kadarius Toney super cheap. Wandale Robinson's a very late round pick. I would probably avoid Sterling Shepard just because he's coming off the Achilles and he's definitely, well, I would say most likely going to miss some time. So I might kind of fade him and go with some of these other guys, but there's definitely some value there. So I agree with Al in terms of the Giants as a stack.
Heck yeah. All right. I want to propel this forward into our running back conversation because there are so many quarterbacks and so many stacking options. We just talked about a couple of the later round guys. There are a bunch of early round guys that we really enjoy. Al, you do a ton of great stuff when you're talking about best ball. You can check out Al's YouTube channel. Al, where can people find you if they want to hear more about that?
It's at Al Zeidenfeld or Al Smizzle Fantasy Football. Everything's at smizzle.tv/links. Very easy to find everything.
Easy. All right. So let's talk about those running backs because you just mentioned Saquon Barkley.
Can I mention one more thing really quick? I just want to mention I listed three quarterbacks that I don't want to stack because the quarterbacks are too expensive, right? Joe Burrow, right? So first of all, you have to get basically Chase and Higgins early.
Wow, we should have done the whole show on this.
And then Joe Burrow in the fifth round, which is just too expensive, right? He's just way too expensive. He was QB8 last year and had like three big games. That is another show, another topic, but I don't want to stack that one because it's too expensive.
Okay.
Derek Carr, same thing. He's going in the eighth round. I think that's too early. And then you have to spend up on Davante Adams and you have to get Darren Waller most likely or Hunter Renfrow, who's a little expensive too. And then Matt Ryan, same thing. 11th round feels too early for me for a run heavy offense. Michael Pittman's not too expensive, which is appealing, but who's the next guy, right? Is it Alec Pierce? You're kind of throwing a dart. Paris Campbell, Naeem Hines, right? And it's all built on Jonathan Taylor anyway, that offense. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. A couple stacks that as I was going through this list, I jumped out as me as no thanks.
No thanks. Okay. All right. All right. Let's talk about some running backs here. We talked about a little earlier. You're taking two to three quarterbacks based on what you're doing. How many running backs are you usually taking in the best ball drafts?
Yeah. So I'm going usually in the 5 to 7 range. Okay. You might hear often zero running back, you know, avoid running back. You could wait till late and get away with that. Again, the reason you can do that is because of waivers, right? You're going to work waivers all season. That you can't do that in best ball, right? So it is more important to me to address running back early on in draft. And I might spend four of my first five picks on running backs, right? Or four of my first six, whatever it is, and then take one the whole rest of the draft and just attack wide receiver and fill out quarterback and tight end. Or if I need defenses, but I'm generally going to be on the low end. I'm going to take a handful of stars. I'm going to have two really good starters. I'm going to have probably a flex running back that's going to be really good and a fourth one. And then I'll take, you know, maybe if I can't remember what I took earlier today, but, you know, maybe it's like a high ceiling insurance back, something like that. And I'm fine if I do that. Now, if you're in a position where the receivers are just falling to you and you take a tight end, then you might have to spend more. You might have to go as high as, say, 7 running backs, something like that. So you have more of those dart throw late round guys. But again, usually with my strategy, running backs early, I'm going low end on them. I'm throwing my darts at receivers.
Al, I know you also have a strategy when it comes to running backs within best ball. How does that compare or differ from the way that Mike approaches it?
So Mike's got more of a robust running back strategy, which has worked for him over the years. I'm more of a bell cow and chill sort of drafter, a hero running back, let's say, right? I'll take my one guy in the first or second round, and then I'm going to wait a little bit because I want to get as much opportunity as possible. And there's so much injury risk at the running back position, and best ball being as much of a war of attrition as it is, I can get players at wide receiver that are going to fill in. And because I only really have to play two running backs a week and let it sort itself out, as long as I'm racking up guys that have a lot of targets early, they're going to play three wide receivers and one in the flex more likely, and my team's going to be a little bit less fragile if I go that route. Now, on DraftKings with full PPR and bonuses, that's much easier to pull off, where I don't really draft more than two running backs in the first 9 or 10 rounds of any draft. 0.5 PPR, you can be a little more aggressive with robust running back if you want, but then I'm still not drafting more than three in the first 10 rounds, and I'm going to focus on those guys that have that built-in floor but high ceiling. Now, built-in floor, don't think these are high floor guys, but I call them the 40% guys. Guys like Kareem Hunt, guys like AJ Dillon, like you're never thrilled to draft them, right? Melvin Gordon III, players of that ilk, Michael Carter on the Jets, somebody who has already got a role on the team. And he's going to be on the field for 35 to 40% of the snaps, which is pretty much the way that every NFL team runs their teams at this point. And if an injury occurs and like 40% of the guys who are the starting running backs at the beginning of every year and not the starting running back by the end of this season, you can oops yourself into a player that is going to have a much more pronounced role on their team. Now, I'm not going to draft somebody like JD McKissick to be that 40% guy. He has a carved out role, but in case Antonio Gibson gets hurt, McKissick's not going to be a 25 touch a game guy. Neither is somebody like Chase Edmonds on Miami. So I want a player as a 40% running back, that backup running back who's already got a role on the team and would take a larger volume role in the case that the number one guy gets injured. So last year it was like somebody like Daryl Henderson, who when Cam Akers was going in the second round, I was getting a massive ADP value or discount on Daryl Henderson in like the 11th round. And that profit paid off where he, after the Cam Akers injury, he was like a fourth round pick. So you're getting a lot of benefit by drafting early when you do that because of the injury risk for running backs. I will draft robust running back from time to time, but I'm more of a running back and chill guy.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. And there's something to be said for that. Again, I just prefer to get the running backs early because I'm assuming they're going to work out. And if I hit on the two or three of those guys, look out. So, I mean, like today I started, Jonathan Taylor with the one, then Kamara, and then I got Dobbins as well. And then Antonio Gibson fell too. So I ended up, I mean, maybe I would have subbed one of them running backs out for another receiver and I still would have been really strong at that position. But I mean, you can get some star players again. And I only took one more late. Like I can't remember who it was. I took a late round insurance flyer and an upside guy and that was it. I could spend all my other picks on
those early four guys.
I had two tight ends, two quarterbacks, everything else was a receiver. I have an inglorious amount of wide receiver options. Some of them will pan out and I'll be in good shape. So again, you can attack it different ways. That's just my preference. Mm-hmm.
Are the running backs that you like different? I don't mean to make this sound trivial, but between like season long and best ball, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not talking about quarterbacks, wide receiver. You're talking about a running back where it's, if you like Christian McCaffrey, you probably like Christian McCaffrey in both formats. Is there any place where you notice a differentiation within your rankings, or is it pretty close to my board is my board? And that's sort of how I'm going to roll with it.
Yeah, I think the only difference for me is really what we talked about toward the beginning, which is that kind of anti-fragile attack, right? Where you're not worried about a season long where 6 teams out of 12 make the playoffs, right? You're more likely to take that backup running back for your starter. In this one, you definitely want to avoid that, certainly in the tournament setting, and get someone else's backup, right? So, you know, I think about like AJ Dillon, Kenneth Walker going in the 6th, 7th round and guys that may not start early in the season, Rashad White, even in the 10th round. Like if I have the Aaron Jones and Rashad Penny and Leonard Fournette, I'm not, they're too expensive anyway. And they're your backups anyway. So I don't like those guys across the board, but you know, as long as I don't have the starter for these teams, Tony Pollard, Michael Carter, James Cook, Alex Mattison, Daryl Henderson, Daryl Williams, who's in Arizona now, if you missed that, and Brian Robinson as well, who I don't think you like, but I would take these guys at their ADPs
as a pass catcher.
As long as I don't have their starter. As long as I don't have their starters, I think those are all guys at reasonable ADPs who could pan out in a big way if the starter goes down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm curious, Al, I do want to ask you really quickly because we don't have a lot of time and I want to talk about wide receivers and tight ends. when you are looking at, let's say you went early and you took, that's going to be a bad example, but Derrick Henry, and then you took a Joe Mixon or a DeAndre Swift, you go early on those two running backs. From that standpoint, are you going to specifically avoid pass catchers, wide receivers, and tight ends in order to try to maximize as much offensive ceiling as you can because of the way that that works? Or are you like, hey man, Robert Woods is in the right spot, so I'm going to draft Robert Woods, and it's I'm not going to think about it. Like, obviously there's value, but you know what I mean?
Right. So if you think a team is going to score a lot of points this year, those touchdowns are going to come whether they come for your running back or the wide receiver. So while running back doesn't correlate with quarterback and wide receiver in a daily fantasy standpoint, on a 1 week sample, a one game sample, over the course of the year, if a team is one of the top five or six scoring teams, we mentioned Joe Mixon and Joe Burrow last year, you could have drafted both on the same team and been fine, because if an offense is really good, it's going to have a lot of touchdowns scored and they're going to be spread out. It's not going to all be passing.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The one thing you don't want to do though is take Derrick Henry and then be like, you know what? I just I got myself Traylon Burks. I'm gonna stack up the Titans.
Give me the Titans too.
Give
yeah.
me Tannehill and Robert Woods, and we're good, and Henry. And you don't want to do that, right? Then you're basically you're stuck. Even if they have a really good season, you're just too invested in one offense, especially in the tournament setting where they have one bad game in the playoffs, it's over. So, you know, you gotta kind of pick your spots.
All right. So let's talk about wide receivers really quickly, because I feel like this is where the most variance comes in. You draft the most wide receivers out of basically any position because of the up and down of that situation. How many wide receivers are you usually looking to take in best ball drafts, Mike?
Yeah, just the math works out with what I said before. I'm going like 8 to 10 range usually, right? And if I go low end running backs, like very low end, like 5, like I said I did today, I might go a little higher, right? I think I ended up with 11 in that one. So again, somewhere in that range. So I guess the answer is 8 to 11.
8 to 11, I guess.
Yeah, I want a lot of receivers. Because again, like Al said before, I mean, you certainly have your three, right? You're always going to have your three receiver slots. Yep. And then the flex, you could choose to use wide receivers there as well. Now, the way my team worked out that I talked about, it's I'm going to have a running back in that flex most likely. J.K. Dobbins is my third running back. He'll probably, one of those running backs will fill that spot. But it doesn't have to be. You know, I have a lot of options at wide receiver. But, you know, I like to have a lot of wide receivers, and I think that's the best strategy.
Yeah. Al?
So I look at it through about 17 rounds of any draft. I want to have 2 quarterbacks, 5 running backs, 8 wide receivers, and 2 tight ends. Then, depending on where I'm a little bit weak, I may draft a 6th running back. I may draft a 9th wide receiver. I may draft a 3rd quarterback or tight end in an 18-round draft. In a 20-round draft, I'm probably going to have 3 quarterbacks, 3 tight ends, and then I'll fill in 1 more running back or wide receiver, depending on where I didn't spend much early draft equity.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. And by the way, I think that one thing I did want to mention with this is tight end plus quarterback. I generally want to be at 4 or 5, right? I'm not afraid to go to 5 if I want to add 1 more to those positions, but usually I don't want to go higher than that. I really don't want 3 quarterbacks and 3 tight ends, because then you're kind of, you're hurting yourself with them positions where you need multiple starters.
I've noticed within wide receivers, there is a really big difference. And again, this is part of the best ball. We are seeing Mike Williams go very early. Mike Williams is not a top 20 wide receiver with when you're talking about season long, but he's a top 10 wide receiver when you're talking about best ball. You know, there are a handful of guys that when you get into this standpoint, Gabe Davis, also another one of those wide receivers, it just has that ceiling is huge. Yeah. So people are taking a huge jump on them. I'm curious, you know, when you look at that, Al, you're really buying in. You're jumping in saying, this is going to be what's going to happen. It's going to break out. How often when you look at taking guys like that, do you look at your market share or how many of them? I guess this is if you're doing tournaments. If you're only doing a couple of them, it doesn't matter. But when you look at how many of those kinds of players, because the ADP on those guys is so different than what our season long is. You're looking at maximizing upside, and there's a big risk when you're looking at maximizing that upside.
And I think that you're taking a shot at me for the draft that we're both in together here on DraftKings, considering that I have basically a full Chargers stack and drafted Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, and Justin Herbert in the first 4 rounds of that draft. So I can't help but feel slighted here, Daniel.
I'm sorry about that.
I'm a little hurt, to be honest with you. But look, Mike Williams had 6 weeks where he had 20-plus DraftKings points last season. Now, he had some weeks where he didn't. This is best ball. Welcome to the Thunderdome. This is what we're doing. We want to capture all the big weeks. And on those weeks where he has 6 or 7 points, hopefully there's somebody else of those 8 or 9 receivers that I had that had a 12 or a 13 point week that can fill in for him in my starting wide receiver core or at flex. So that's where the depth comes into play. That's where the war of attrition comes into play. You have like a 12-person bench to choose from, and you don't have to choose. So If one of those guys has that week when he has an off week, great. But I'm going to get 5, 6, 7 weeks where Mike Williams has 20 to 35 DraftKings points, and you want to capture all of that upside.
Heck yeah. Yeah, especially if it's not a tournament. Like, they count all the same, right? You're just totaling points. If he gets 80 points in 1 week and zero the next two, you got 80 points, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah. So you're just totaling points in that sort of format. So no doubt. Agreed.
If you look at it, just if you jump in and you're like, I want to do a best ball thing, you can look at it and see the ADP looks sort of different than maybe what some of the mock drafts, if you're doing regular, you know, season long mock drafts. And that's kind of what I want to close with. You know, we've talked, we made a lot of conversation throughout the last, not just today, but through, I feel like, the last season, where we've talked about best ball drafts being a really great way to be able to supplement some of your mock drafts. We still think that, especially if you know that you're going to be playing on ESPN or you're going to be playing on Yahoo or you pick another site, make sure that you understand their ADP. That is very important that you understand their ADP as a part of it, because you can find some values there. But I love being able to do best ball as a part of my mock drafting strategy. Mike and Al, I'm curious what you guys think as a part of, using this as a learning strategy until we get into our actual, you know, real drafting season.
It's super fun. I mean, again, for a long time in the offseason, all you could do is mock draft, right? Without starting your real league. Now you can actually put a couple bucks on the line and actually show off your talent in fantasy and your strategy and your knowledge of players. And again, some people might ask, why am I drafting at this point? It's not, you know, there's so much to learn still. I mean, if there could be injuries and
ton of reasons.
If you're up on the league though, you can still have an edge over the other people in the league. If you know, if you're on top of things, you can certainly take advantage of that knowledge and get an edge. We just talked about that with guys with ADPs that were moving, and I'll talk about Jarvis Landry. Gabriel Davis's ADP is skyrocketing now, but early this offseason, it was not nearly this high, right? So you could have taken advantage of that all offseason long. So again, if you love fantasy football like we do, if you're watching this, you probably do.
Yep.
Something you could do in the offseason and take advantage of that love and have some fun year-round.
Heck yeah. Al, any closing thoughts to go along with that?
Along the same lines, Mike has some of the best lists and spreadsheets. All of his rankings are available on ESPN, and they have been for a few years. Now, as great as they are, I don't learn anything by drafting against 10 of Mike's lists, where I learn more from doing a best ball draft for $1, $3, or $5, where people are making real money decisions in there for all 18 rounds instead of just staying for one or two and then bouncing into drafting against all of Mike's lists.
Yeah, that's first there. Believe it or not, there are people out there who don't look at my rankings and just draft right off of them. So I don't know why. I don't know why you would make that decision in your life, but some people do that and you could take advantage of that. So I'm with you, Al.
That's so good. Thank you so much to everybody staying and hanging out with us. I know this was a really long off-season show, especially if you're just new to best ball. You don't know a whole lot about it. Hopefully we give you some good info. Make sure that you follow everybody on Twitter. I am at Daniel Dopp, at Mike Clay NFL, and at Al Zeidenfeld. We are not going to be back next week. News alert to the video team that just got in my ear, because it's 4th of July week. Everybody's out of town, so we will be back in 2 weeks. Surprise to that. So we will see you, everyone, in 2 weeks. Don't forget to love each other. Be good human beings to each other. Hug somebody. Put as much love as you can into this world. We love you guys. We'll see you soon.
He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat, he's the one to blame. He's a brainiac, brainiac on the case, with projections that can put us in first place. He's a brainiac, brainiac, he's Mike Clay.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.